This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Tuesday, October 26, 2021. I'm Caleb Brown. It would be a bit too easy to just blame Joe Biden for backups now being experienced at ports, but he does bear some responsibility. As to the bulk of the problems now being caused at key shipping points in the U.S., it's trade rules larded up with special interest favors, unions that have resisted mechanization, and other regulatory handouts that have made the U.S. ports among the least efficient in the world. Cato's Scott Linsicum comments. Scott, as best as you can tell, why are Americans in particular having trouble purchasing and receiving in a timely fashion goods that they would like to purchase from overseas?
Sure. So some of it is just the pandemic doing its thing. Over the last year or so, there have been really substantial imbalances in national supply and demand patterns. You know, our global supply chains developed over decades based on somewhat predictable and consistent patterns of supply and demand. You know, sure, import and export volumes would change every year a little, but shipping companies and trains and truckers and all those links in the supply chain could kind of figure things out, and they set levels for that. Well, a global pandemic hits and all of a sudden economies are closing down and reopening. Countries are getting vaccinated at different times. And all of this is going to have an impact on those supply and demand patterns. You combine that with a increase in the United States in Americans' desire for goods and comfort with e-commerce, and you have jacked up that demand even more. And then you have that demand hitting some pretty significant supply issues in places, particularly in Asia, that have adopted really onerous COVID mitigation strategies, zero COVID policies that essentially shut down ports and factories when there's an outbreak. So all that together is inevitably going to put stress on the supply chain. And so a lot of this is just, again, the pandemic doing its thing. But there are also a lot of government and other policies that are adding to our supply chain woes. And that's, I think, what's the more important lesson for policy world on this is that, our supply chain did develop over decades, but it developed in significant part in response to policies that we've put in place that have actually and intentionally decreased efficiency and flexibility in the system. And so I'll give you a couple of examples. I think one of the big ones is at the ports. The longshoremen unions there have immense leverage through because they essentially control all the labor, particularly on the West Coast, but even on the East Coast, even in right-to-work states, they have a lot of power, which of course enforced through things like the National Labor Relations Board and the rest. And they have not only have negotiated contracts with high wages, but there's a lot of inflexibility in the system. So very regimented shifts, time and a half for nights and weekends, and difficulty of adding additional unionized workers. But the bigger thing, I think, is that these contracts specifically prohibit automation. So you combine all these things together, and U.S. ports are some of the least efficient in the world. There was a World Bank ranking a year ago that ranked Los Angeles and Long Beach about 330th out of 350 ports around the world. Even our more efficient ports don't even crack the top 50. And so we have a very inefficient port system. Now, combined, and so our trucking system, our trains, all of that really have grown around very inefficient ports that, you know, in bad times, that didn't really matter much, or in good times, that didn't really matter much. But when things get stressed, you know, additional efficiency would be useful. Now, compounding that are a lot of other policies in there. For example, the good old Jones Act, which, you know, restricts the coastwise shipping between U.S. ports to American-owned and invested in flag vessels. Well, the Jones Act has made coastwise shipping really cost prohibitive. So nobody does it. Nobody ships, even though it should be the most efficient way to ship, say, an orange from Florida to Boston. Nobody does it because it's really expensive. Well, that means that it puts additional pressure on rail and trucking capacity. So that orange is now on a truck going up I-95. We have trade policies that our anti-dumping and countervailing duty system, which is essentially on autopilot. We just slapped tariffs of 221% on chassis from China, the largest producer of chassis. Now, chassis are what trucks use. You put a container on the chassis, the truck links up to the chassis and hauls it off, right? Well, we're actually having a chassis shortage right now. And trucking companies, freight companies aren't going to buy additional chassis from China. There's not enough domestic production and because of these tariffs. And the law totally prohibits the government from suspending or delaying these duties or even considering broader economic harms when applying. And they just automatically, in the middle of a shipping crisis in May, slapped 221% tariffs on chassis.
So a lot of these decisions that were made at some point in the past, not during a supply crunch or not during a global pandemic, have essentially taken off the table decisions that individual market actors might like to have made to deal with and effectively get their jobs done.
Exactly. And another big one. So, you know, there's a worker shortage all over the country. And if you talk to industry experts, logistics pros, they say that one of the big challenges that the supply chains are having right now is they can't get enough workers at the warehouses. They can't find enough truckers to haul goods. So that, of course, causes containers to back up at the ports. The ports move even slower. Well, we have a backlog of about 1.2 million immigrants that have been issued visas but haven't been allowed in the country, per our colleague David Beer. Goldman Sachs estimates that that is putting substantial pressure on the labor shortage that we're having due to some COVID factors as well. And again, it's contributing to these supply chain problems. Now, another thing we've done is that the U.S. government negotiated as part of the NAFTA that we would allow trucks from Mexico, so Mexican freight companies, to operate on U.S. roads. So essentially hauling goods from Mexico to the United States or hauling goods in the United States. So Mexican trucking companies were supposed to be allowed to access the U.S. market. It's a free trade agreement, right? That would be one of the provisions. Well, the United States has never implemented this fully, due in large part to opposition from the Teamsters Union and other trucking companies. I should add, we had a pilot program that checked the safety and environmental compliance of these Mexican trucking companies, and they were found to be very safe, to have very few problems. Well, you know what? Those restrictions have added additional supply constraints, and they've done it in two ways. I mean, one, Mexican trucks and truckers that could be hauling goods between, say, a port and a warehouse in the United States, they can't haul those goods. They're prohibited. But another thing is that the system now requires Mexican trucking companies to drop their goods at the U.S.-Mexico border. And then a U.S. truck picks it up at the border and then hauls it off. Well, that, of course, absorbs additional U.S. trucking capacity that could have, again, been inland somewhere, soaking up some of this excess demand that we're seeing right now. So, again, it's not that these things were implemented during the pandemic, I mean, other than the tariffs, but they all have served to create a system that is more fragile, less flexible than it should be, and thus exacerbating our supply chain crisis.
So the U.S. Congress, as you will hear on this podcast repeatedly, has for decades delegated a whole lot of powers with respect to trade and immigration and a number of other issues. So with the toolkit that the president now has, and we can argue about whether it's appropriate for him to have that or not, with that toolkit, what can the president do right now without any help to make things easier for producers and consumers to shake hands and be happy and transfer goods and money back and forth?
You know, unfortunately, there aren't a ton of things he can do. The two things that I think he can do with the stroke of a pen are to nix President Trump's tariffs on steel and aluminum and on Chinese goods. So those chassis tariffs I mentioned, there are an additional 25% tariffs under Section 301 of the U.S. law, which President Biden could remove with a stroke of a pen. Now, that isn't going to solve the supply chain problems, but it's at least going to put a little downward pressure on prices and a little help for manufacturers. You know, manufacturers right now are paying hand over fist in terms of shipping cost and raw materials cost. So that'll help a little bit. But Biden can't actually touch those 200% tariffs. The law and Congress has made sure, you know, Congress has delegated a lot of tariff imposing authority. It hasn't imposed as much tariff removal authority, which is quite telling, honestly. And so unfortunately, those are just going to be, they're going to be here. They're kind of cemented. And there's a process for removing them, but that takes some time. But I'll tell you, another thing that Biden could do, and hopefully will do, is these immigrant visas, right? I mean, these are consulate offices and immigrants that have been vetted, and U.S. consulate offices that should be open. I mean, we have widely available vaccines, and you know, we should be at this point, you know, processing these visas and letting these people come here and work here. And so, you know, again, David had on your podcast, I believe, you know, talked about some of the things Biden could do quite quickly to alleviate some of the worker shortage there. You know, unfortunately, beyond that, you know, I think that Biden deserves a little bit of credit trying to get the ports to stay open 24/7. I'm sure he worked out some deal with the Longshoremen Union to get that. But what we've seen and what the ports and industry experts have said is that that's really just going to be a drop in the bucket. And again, not to sound like a broken record, it's because the system evolved over a long period of time to reflect inefficiencies at the ports. And you can't just snap your fingers and suddenly have port capacity, shipping container capacity, trucking capacity to reflect a more efficient port system. It's just, it's going to take some time. And hopefully we'll see some movement there. And hopefully, you know, Congress will learn some lessons on things, reforms we need to make.
Scott Linsicum is a senior fellow at the Cato Institute. Subscribe to and rate the Cato Daily Podcast pretty much anywhere. And follow us on Twitter @CatoPodcast.